Welcome to the R7 Christian Marketing Podcast, sponsored by Emma's Good.
R7 is an innovative, God-inspiring process that explores personal and professional purpose. R7 analyzes seven strategies to transform your vision and find direction in your organizational marketing. R7 establishes clarity and guidance for the gift we call life. This is my destiny. Welcome back to the R7 podcast. It's been a hot minute since we've been on the podcast today. Man, another incredible, awesome guest, Mark Dreistadt. Oh, man, you are the OG of Christian marketing. I look to you as whatever Mark's doing, we got to look at this. Man, you've just been out there for so long. So much wisdom. I'm so excited to talk to you today. Welcome to the podcast.
It's so good to be with you. We've known each other quite a few years, and we've gone through some seasons. And,
yes, we have.
And so it'll be fun to talk about it today. And I just reflected that I'm an old guy, so I just reflected that I've been in ministry work, sometimes full time ministry, sometimes agency ministry, but I call this all ministry. I've been in ministry work for 50 years as of this year. So it's kind of exciting season for me. I'm seeing what God's done and looking back over a lot of those years, amazing miracles and a lot of wisdom that I've learned from a lot of people over the years.
If you're listening out there, watching, listening, and you want to get into Christian marketing, this is going to be a really cool podcast for you to listen to. Mark, I just can't imagine. I was talking to my staff today, and just anticipating this conversation of how many brands, Christian brands, you have stood up over the years and how many brands you've been around. I mean, gosh, in meetings after meetings, and gosh, just kind of give the audience a background. Let's start there.
So my background was, first of all, I'm a minister. So I was involved in pastoral work for a while. And then I got involved in Christian television, and I was very actively involved in Christian television as a general manager and then also as a executive vice president for a network. And I left that network to start Infinity Concepts. But let me tell you a couple of the reasons behind that. When I was at the network, one of my jobs was to meet with our various agencies. Back in 2002, when we started, you had all kinds of siloed agencies in the Christian space. We had a marketing agency, a brand development agency, a donor communications agency, a public relations agency, a media agency, and they were all individual, single focus disciplines. And so I would meet with each of these agencies as our network, on behalf of our network, and have to kind of synthesize all the great ideas they brought to the table, because they were great ideas, but they weren't necessarily our ideas, things that would work for us. So I had to synthesize that and figure out, okay, what's the plan to bring all this together in one way that would really synthesize a message for us? And so when the time came, I felt like my season was over at the network, and I wanted to start Infinity Concepts. That was one of the bases, was I want to build an agency that builds the brand correctly, because when the brand is right, everything else flows so easily from it. And so we were one of the first, if not the first, in the Christian space to have an integrated brand communications agency. So we do marketing, fundraising, public relations, media, all the different disciplines are all under one roof and driven by developing a single brand that is clear, compelling, and memorable. So that was sort of the basis. The second thing that drove us was, I had a friend of mine, when I was talking about starting this, I had a friend of mine asked me, he said, so when you do this kind of work, it seems like you have to make a choice. And he said, you either have to sell or you have to serve. You either have to keep selling product or you have to find people you can serve. And so we developed a serve first mentality, serve first philosophy, that we want to find people that we can come alongside of, be a strategic partner, and help them grow. I know that's your philosophy too, because we've talked about it. To kind of really come alongside and not just sell a product or sell a service, but really help another organization grow, develop their brand, communicate effectively, and achieve the objectives that they're pursuing.
There's so much wisdom in that. And I think that, you know, we too like love to build trust with the client and know mm-hmm. that we're with them along the way. Mm-hmm. There's just so much wind out there and the season just changes. And, you know, with coming out of COVID, with what you can and can't say, what was hate speech, not hate speech, what would be optimized, not optimized, now SEO, now AEO. Like having a trusted partner alongside of you to me is key in terms of going through these peaks and valleys.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
You know, you're just not around for 50 years if you don't build that trust and serve first. If it's all about money, forget it. You're flying on the wall. You know,
so that's a tough hill to climb, and that makes it every day hard. But when you're serving, every day is a joy because you're serving the kingdom, you're serving the Lord, you're serving your clients. It's such a joy then to go to work every day. And we build a team around that principle. And, today we're serving, upwards of 50 clients and enjoying just the work that we do. And it's a broad spectrum of work because that's been my focus from the very beginning. Let's find a way to provide this broad spectrum of integrated communications. We do public relations and we're involved in crisis management. We're involved in reputation management after the crisis and kind of helping people with their lives back together again. We're involved in helping develop a donor base and a donor program to support and sustain the mission that God has called organizations to do. We're involved in marketing and advertising just to raise awareness and create interaction. So, I mean, it's every day is different and every client is different. And I love that. I like diversity. I like variety. And this has sustained me. I Infinity Concepts has been around for 24 years since I started it. It's just been a joy, and we've gotten to work with some of the greatest ministries in the world, literally, because we do a lot of work in Israel, and that's a story in itself too that we may want to just touch on a little bit.
Yeah, I was actually going to bring that up. Want to talk marketing in Israel with you because I think we share that common philosophy of supporting Israel. But before we talk about Israel, that might make up most of the podcast, but I really want to just go back because talking about brands and, just really talk to the person who's listening out there, who's been in this Christian organization, maybe a leader of it for 3 to 5 years, things aren't going so well. Mm-hmm. Things could be better. You know, what do you look at of all the meetings and all the budgets and all the KPIs that you look at? You know, what do you see as an opportunity to get better at? Where do you see Christian brands failing that they can get better at?
Well, I not too long ago, I went to visit one of our clients. This client has been around for 80 years. Strong ministry, well-established. If I told you their name, you'd know who they were. Mm-hmm. And I visited the campus and I met with a bunch of different people. And at the end, I sat down in the president's office and he said, "So what do you think?" And I said, "I think you have a wonderful group of people here in a wonderful ministry that doesn't know what each other is doing. They're siloed, they're disconnected." And he said, "Well, what do we do about it?" And so I said, "We have to go back and revisit that brand." That's that first love, Dave.
Yeah.
You know, what is it that God's really, the assignment that God's giving you to do? And so that's what we did with this organization. And, you know, as we went through a process, and we do have a process, as I'm sure you do, for kind of building the building blocks of the brand. And as we went through that, we made a few small adjustments that were revelatory and brought everybody together in a whole new way. So I think that's one of the things that when I first got into this, the story is it was back in 1988 and I was on staff at a church and I felt like my season there was coming to an end. I was looking at going to pastor in another place. And that particular church had started a television station, and they asked me if I would be willing to take over the television station instead of leaving for another church. And I sort of chuckled at them because that was right after all of the scandals of 1988. Jimmy Swaggart, Jim Baker, Marvin Gorman, all these other guys that had all these challenges. And I said, sort of like asking me to take over the Titanic after it hits the iceberg, isn't it? And they said, well, would you consider praying about it? And I said, yes, I would. And so I went. And after a couple of days, my wife and I agreed, and I took on the challenge, and I took over the TV station. That's how I got involved in television. And it was a mess. The station was terrible. It was in terrible shape. And the morale was terrible. The finances were terrible. The reputation was terrible. Everything had gone down because of the circumstances going on nationally. And so I took the staff, after praying about a while, I took the staff to a separate location, a place apart. And I said, okay, let's revisit why we're here in the first place. What is it that God has asked us to do? What is it? What's the assignment he's given us? And why have you taken your life, taken your time, and invested in this process? And that was the beginning of building out what our branding process is today. Because what happened is, over the course of several hours, as we revisited piece by piece, we rebuilt a new team. We walked in 25 independent people who were all worried about whether they had a job tomorrow or not. And we came out of there a team committed to working together. And it was revolutionary. And I think when we talk about ministries that are struggling, sometimes the first thing you need to do is go back and ask, what is God's assignment? What was what's the reason I'm doing what I'm doing?
That's good.
And then begin to look at what you need to do to build that out. We talk about mission, vision, values, most people do. But then we begin to talk about, okay, so positioning, where do you want to position? How do you want people to think about you? And how are you going to communicate it? And then we have, establishing the brand in a way that's memorable, that's clear, and that has a brand promise that you can live up to every day. Those are things, it's a process. It sounds easy. It's not always easy. But when you master it, boy, it just gives you so much ability to communicate effectively through all kinds of different channels because the message is the same. I'll use this maybe as a moment to jump to the Israel. We don't have to stay there, but one of the greatest examples of that is when we started working with the government of Israel. We had the opportunity represent Israel for about 6 years in North and South America. And when we first went in, we asked, what plans do you have in place? And they showed me some of the videos they had, and it was definitely not geared for the Christian audience. And I said, listen, we need to build a brand new brand for the evangelical Israel, as it were. So we developed 12 different points that were conversational points about Israel that identified the brand and locked it in. And we began then to use those 12 points for all of the marketing, all the communication, all of the design work. Everything was built around those 12 points and the brand promise that when you visit Israel, you'll never be the same. And as we did that over the course of those several years, we saw tourism start upturn, picking up. We saw pastors getting involved. We saw it growing and growing. And by the time we were done with the 6 month period, we had doubled Christian tourism in Israel.
Wow.
And so it's a matter of getting that brand right.
Yes.
And then articulating it over and over and over. There's a fun thing we did once. I was doing a workshop at the National Religious Broadcasters with Phil Cook, who I think has been on your podcast.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And two others, Mark Thomas and Colleen Zott. Colleen Zott has passed away since. She was the infomercial writer. She's an amazing woman. And Mark Thomas was a commercial producer. And so the four of us were doing a workshop on a Saturday. It was an all-day workshop. And my part was the branding. And so I was talking about branding Phil Cook and what would it take to brand Phil Cook. Now this is years ago before.
Yeah.
And I branded him the TV guy. And so, so we just, every time we talked about Phil, he was the TV guy, the TV guy. And what happened is people noticed that by the afternoon, they were calling him the TV guy. They weren't calling him Phil. It's that repetition of something that's memorable, fun, engaging, has a point of anchor. And getting the brand right, Dave, is obviously my passion. You can tell I'm getting a little wound up here. I love getting the brand right, because when you do, it just is so memorable, it sings. And then it's so easy then for all that communication to flow.
When I think about brand, I think about our identity within the alignment of Christ. Mm-hmm. This is our space, right? What is that message that God has given you, and how do you align it, and then how do you broadcast it, right? Mm-hmm. And so I get equally as fired up about the brand, because it's almost like the Pursuit of Happiness movie.
Yeah.
You know, like when you watch that and you go, okay, he's aligned and now he's becoming perhaps the version that God has created him to be. Mm-hmm. And things just start happening. And all these movies, like I just get, my wife laughs at me because I just get so emotional over this alignment. Because to me, there's nothing more powerful than you becoming the best version of yourself, whether it's you're running a Christian organization or you're an athlete or you're an employee. Like really aligning yourself with that brand and that vision is just so powerful. So I think we agree on that for sure.
Absolutely.
What are some key, in your mind, what are some key, I don't know, attributes, I guess, of when it's not aligned? Because I think in some meetings you go, I'm aligned and it's just not working. We got to change the whole thing. And you go, no. Because I know I've been caught in that too, going, yeah, I think we need to change. And what I've realized, you know, is there's some attributes that we didn't pick up on that we didn't align. And over the years, I've done this with personal brands that I've built. I've just kind of scrapped the whole brand and said, you know what, the market's not ready for it. And I've left because I didn't hit some type of tipping point where the critical mass could pick up on my brand, or the community around me didn't pick up on it because I didn't communicate it early and often. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, there's three or four questions or comments in there that I could go a couple different directions. So I'm trying to figure out which way to go first. I think you know, first of all, when we do branding in our organization, we build it out of a set of building blocks that are we call them. You know, it's your core. We talk about DNA. What are the building blocks that make you who you are? And so we build the brand out of a lot of building blocks. And so if we do that correctly, then the brand does have resonance.
Right.
If you don't do it correctly, then it doesn't. So when folks have wanted to shortcut that process, is usually
or rush through it fast, not be have the time. Yeah.
Because it is a process. And then we have what we call branding points, that we actually have a whole printed list of potential branding points that we talk about, because anywhere the public touches your brand is a branding point. And if you have a brand that's been defined, then you have to represent that brand at every branding point. And a lot of organizations, the reason I'm going there, Dave, is because a lot of organizations never get that far.
Right.
You know, they'll do the branding work sometimes, and they'll get a nice brand standards book, and they'll get all the identity pieces. They'll have the conceptual pieces. They'll put it on their website, and then they put everything on the shelf and they go do what they do. And the brand doesn't communicate into culture. And a good brand flows out of culture, so that it's from the inside out. That's sort of what I've always been a promoter of, branding from the inside out. Learn who you are and then express it appropriately and articulately. And so when you have the cultures aligned, then you can begin to say, okay, now we got to get the messaging aligned. And so things that get out of alignment, I think, are when those check marks are not done, when people don't line that up. So I think to a large degree, you know, there's a sin of commission, there's a sin of omission. I think that poor branding is often a sin of omission. People don't think about it. They don't think that matters. How you answer the telephone has an impact on your brand. Mm-hmm. How your lobby looks when people walk into your business has an impact on your brand. Yeah, if you think about places that have really, really strong brands, you know, think about, I don't know if we want to talk about specific companies on your show or not, but if you think about, you know, like a Disney or a Starbucks or a McDonald's, each of those experiences, I said each of those names, you visualized a building, a place. You visualized an experience, a set of colors, a set of experiences that you've had, because I believe a brand is built on a series of experiences that you have with that brand. It's not just the logo or the look or even what you say about it. It's based on experience. Disney, of all, probably understands that very, very well, because when you go to a Disney property, everything is aligned to the brand meticulously. Every nuance is adjusted to try to make sure that that brand is consistent from the first time you walk across their threshold until you walk out. And so that's really what organizations need to begin to think, is that the brand is deeper than just what we put on television. It's deeper than our advertising. It's deeper than the brochure we do. It has to do with the culture. It has to do with the experiences people have. You talk about love and peace and joy, and when people call you on the phone, you're rude. It doesn't line up. It's just thinking through, how can we create a comprehensive experience that aligns with the brand and the culture around that brand?
Okay. So I can see somebody listening to us going, all right, these guys know what they're talking about. I don't have the time. I'm just going to throw into the ChatGPT or Claude and I'll build my brand. What say you, Mark?
Well, AI tends to want to give you what you want it to tell you.
Yeah.
So first of all, I love AI. AI is a great tool when used correctly, but used incorrectly, it can be dangerous. And so AI tends to give the user what they want to hear. And sometimes when you're doing branding, it's contrary to what you want to hear.
Right.
That's right. And that has been oftentimes a very difficult moment, Dave, when, you know, I'm talking with a client and we're trying to build the blocks of their brand, and they are hanging on to something that has no place there. And they get very passionate about hanging on to it. And so it sometimes you have to be willing to let go of things. That's part of the process. But I think using AI can be done. But again, you have to have a process that delivers the outputs that you need. What we found in our work with AI, maybe you have too, is the better your input, the better your output. And the problem is most people don't take time to develop the output, to the input, to the level it needs to be developed to give them a proper output. Does that
make
sense?
That's really good. That's really good, Mark. I totally 100%. We use AI almost every day at our agency. And you're so spot on. I was kind of getting to the point, like, if you're listening to this, you can't do your brand by yourself. That's where I'm at. Like, you just can't. You need somebody who understands. It takes objective. It takes some pushback. It takes a set of questions that you're not even thinking about to really build out that brand thoroughly. And so, you know, having the wisdom of you and your agency is a great starting point to really understand your brand and recalibrate and be ready to pivot. Because if you could have gotten yourself where you needed to go, you would have been there, and you're not. So you need somebody to come in and you know, give you a better view.
You know, it's the blind spot concept, that everyone has a blind spot. You can't see everything because we have a certain paradigm through which we see the world. We have a set of glasses through which we see the things around us. And there are blind spots. I can't see what's on the back of my head because my eyes aren't back there. They're up here. And so, you know, there's a saying, I'm not sure if I'm going to get it right. I'll try it. A wise man, a smart man learns from his mistakes and never repeats them. A wise man finds a smart man and learns from and never makes the mistakes in the first place. I don't know if I got that quite right. But
I get it, though. It's really good. Yeah. You know, when you were mentioning Starbucks and McDonald's and those brands, I sometimes when we get to the end, it's not what we need to add to the brand. So we need to subtract to put on the VIP experience. And that excites me because now it's clean and it's simple and people can get it. If it's complicated and people can't get it, they're voting with their feet. They ain't coming.
We call that reducing the cognitive load.
Yes.
And if you're going to have, when a lot of people come to us with a very high cognitive load, they have this whole big picture that they've built, and that's important. But what you're communicating needs to be simplified and clarified. We're working with one client right now on some communication issues, and I showed them a video spot. And said, oh, they said, that's what we want. That's what we want, just like that. And I said, okay, that's great. Let's get your message just like that. Because that one was just one line, one message, 30-second, 60-second spot, and it drove it home so deeply. It was an emotional moment. But when you have 16 points you're trying to make and fit it into a 30-second video or 60-second, or even into a brochure, it's too much. You get overload. Yeah. You have to reduce the cognitive load. The second thing we talk about is you can't operate from a position of presumed knowledge. What happens is people get so comfortable with what they do, they assume everybody knows what they know. And so when they try to communicate, oftentimes they communicate at a level that goes right over the heads of the people they're trying to reach because they have presumed knowledge. They presume that everybody understands this basic concept. This happens in academic circles all the time. Yeah. The professor assumes you know certain fundamentals about what he's discussing. And if you don't know those fundamentals, it just doesn't
right.
compute. And so when you're talking about marketing, you have to be careful to reduce cognitive load to the appropriate level for the medium you're using. And you have to make sure that you're not using presumed knowledge to get to that point. You have to make sure that you're covering the bases that someone who knows nothing, who is coming into that communication space with a blank slate, can get the message that quickly. Now that takes work.
It takes a lot of work, a lot of A/B testing too. Yeah. So before we move on to Israel, because I do want to get there, I just want to chat with you about persona. You know, you've got this brand message. You feel like you found the tip of the spear in your messaging, right? Mm-hmm. You're going after it. Like, how much do you put into the persona or the avatar of who you're reaching?
It depends on the client. Some clients, that's important to identify who the target audience is because there's some uncertainty about who that audience is. And so when that's the case, we certainly do that. And we've created, you know, a number of different personas that actually define the type of person. And that helps with that communication. There are other clients that, you know, we know that they're looking for a more of a broad brush, certain evangelical group or, you know, and so that's not as critical there. So now we're looking more for values base as opposed to persona base.
That's
good. We take both ways, but it is critically important to know your audience and to speak to your audience about the thing that's going to resonate with them. So like when we were doing Israel, again, bridging to Israel just a little bit, we were doing Israel, we defined America as a group of different segments. You know, there are Jewish Americans and American Jews. What's the difference? Jewish people who live in America are practicing their faith. Others are simply Jewish by heritage. So those two groups are defined separately. When we talk about Christians, we define them by, you know, those who are, well, Catholic was one group. And then on the Protestant side, we broke that down between mainline and evangelical because the language is slightly different. And so we have to define that correctly. And then who within those groups are the ones who are going to be most responsive? And so that's where the personas come in, where you're defining what they're like and describing them. And yeah, the other thing that we can do with personas, Dave, that is we have a tool that we use. It's kind of fun where you can take a database of like a ministry, for example, could take a donor base of their best donors, and we can put it into our tool, and it will develop a persona for the database and profile them that says, you know, 70% of your donor base are people like this and 30% people like this. And that helps with the marketing and the targeting and the messaging as well, once you understand who it is that's already responding to you. So
yeah, as a follow-up, we need to get the tool out there, and you know, if I can help you in any way to market that or broadcast it, let me know.
Target Engine, we love it.
Yeah. Target Engine, all right. That's awesome. Yeah, let's talk about Israel now. And so your love for Israel started when?
Partly when I was a kid. I mean, I fell in love with the stories of the Bible and always wanted to go. So that was
okay.
The desire to go was from the time I was a kid. Okay. But I fell in love with the land and people of Israel in 1993 on my very first visit. I was at a television station at the time, and I had a daily talk show. And the government of Israel reached out and said, would you be interested in coming and doing some shooting some footage over here and doing some programming? And so we talked about it, and I finally accepted, and they allowed me to come with a cameraman. And so my cameraman and myself went to Israel, and they gave me a guide and a driver. And they said, you're here for the week. Go where you want to go. Do what you want to do. Shoot what you want to shoot. Just tell the truth. That was the only guideline they gave me.
Wow.
And so we traveled all through Israel, met wonderful, wonderful people, and began what has been now a multi-decade journey with the people of Israel. And so that was where it began back in 93. And I took tours. I've taken, I don't know how many dozens of tours to Israel. I can tell you, I've baptized over 100 pastors in the Jordan River.
Come on, which is kind really? Of a fun
thing. Yeah.
That's incredible. Wow.
You know, when you're there in the Jordan River, many people want to be, some are being baptized the first time, most are being rebaptized. And so the pastors were rebaptized because they were already baptized. So it's been exciting. And then, you know, representing the government of Israel happened in 2006.
Okay.
And through 2012. And that was when we were able to double the tourism and see God do such wonderful things. And, you know, right now, of course, they're going through some challenging times, but I believe that, you know, peace is on its way. And when it does, then, you know, folks will be returning, I'm sure. But as we were working with that, I think we built a lot of trust with the Jewish people and with the Israeli people. And because of that, there's about a third of our clients are Israel related in one way or the other. So it's a very deep relationship that we continue to have with the land and people of Israel. And I do love the land. I do love the people. And I believe that they're folks who has God's heart, you know.
Amen. We just came out, I think it's been about 6 months now, but we just came out of a very big quantitative and qualitative study about how evangelicals perceive Israel. We did an assessment of 1,017 evangelical Christians, quantitative study, and asked them a series of questions on how they perceive Israel. And it was very interesting, to say the least, on where that landed. And then we did a qualitative with 4 different personas, one of them being pastors. We did those with 50. There was 10 pastors and female, 10 male, that kind of thing. And that was very interesting. I'll share some of that today, but I kind of want to understand, like, how do you think Americans, as just kind of a general blanket statement, or I would say evangelical Christians, how do you think they perceive Israel?
Well,
do you think we're smart as a nation about Israel?
Meaning informed? I don't think we're well informed at all.
Yeah, no.
We also do research every year. We put a report out about once a quarter.
Okay.
Which, by the way, we just put a report out about evangelicals and Christian media, which is quite fascinating.
How
evangelicals are engaging with Christian media, what they engage with. And what's fascinating is on a monthly basis, 89% of evangelicals engage with Christian media in one form or another. We analyzed 11 different forms of Christian media and looked at how they were interacting. The top two are music on the radio and music through streaming. And so, which is not a surprise. Social media is number three. You know what number four is? Christian television.
Really? Like TBN?
Christian television, non-preaching Christian television.
Non-preaching.
So okay. Talk shows, films, wow. That kind of thing. Yeah, that's number four. So it's fascinating. That report, by the way, is available on our website, so folks can get it for free. And we've done two research reports. No, we did three on Israel learning how the American people, well, the evangelicals specifically, relate to Israel. And I just wrote an article on it that was published in with the International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem about the fact that the older folks have a good perception of God's calling on Israel, that they are the chosen people of God, and he miraculously birthed that nation out of chaos, really. And mm-hmm. So the younger people.
Now, when you say younger, what age group are you think you're? What age group you think? Well, that
it,
is?
I think it starts at like 45, then 35, and then 25. Okay. So it's from that. So let's pivot it at 45. Let's go there. Younger than 45 have a less and less understanding of Israel, less and less commitment to Israel, less and less appreciation of Israel. The second piece that we found in our research was that most evangelical churches used to talk about Israel a lot, but no longer talk about Israel. It's not that they're against Israel, they just don't talk about Israel. And so consequently, the younger believers have not been educated in who Israel is and its significance in our faith. And so there's a real, that was really a call to action. Pastors, let's talk about Israel from the pulpit. Talk about who the Jewish people are. Talk about the miracle of the land. And listen, with everything that's going on in the Middle East these days, it's a perfect time to talk about what God is doing and what God has done and what he's going to do. So it's,
you know, your results are spot on to what we found. Same thing. In fact,
fun to compare report.
Yeah. A step further, you know, it's interesting, you know, when asked if a pastor would talk about Israel, they elected not to. They said, no, I would not do it. And the follow-up question, this is in the qualitative side of it. Mm-hmm. The follow-up question was why? And it's because they didn't know where they stood. And so they didn't want to, you know, throw a lightning rod down the middle of their congregation, which hurt me, Mark.
Yeah.
That hurt me.
Yeah.
That the, you know, and this is just a poll of the 10 that we, you know, I don't know if that's reflective. I would love to hear your thoughts on that of the entire country, but it's that younger generation is not getting educated. Somebody's got to step up and be the educational right. platform for that. Mm-hmm. And really preach why God loves Israel and, you know, and loves his chosen people. That is definitely dying off, and we need help in that.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I think there's been a couple of shifts in not in theology, but in priority. Mm. I think, you know, if you drill down theologically, well, here you actually I have a number for you. 5212. 5212. Five out of every 10 evangelicals in America believes that the Jews are the chosen people of God.
Okay, say that again. Five out of every ten
evangelicals in the United States of America believe that the Jews are the chosen people of God and have a special place in God's plan.
Okay, got it.
Two believe that the church has now become the chosen people, that they've replaced. In other words, replacement theology, supersession.
Replacement theology. Uh-oh.
So 2 out of every 10 evangelicals today believe that that's the case. 1 out of every 10 will tell you they never were God's chosen people in the first place, which is a disturbing position. And then the last 2 is 2 out of 10 will say, I have no idea, because they have no theological basis to have you even form an opinion. So that's a very sad case. I mean, I'm happy for the 5. But even if we could get the 2 that have no theological base to at least form an opinion, we would be in better shape. But so that's 5-2-1-2. That's easy to remember. And it kind of helps.
That's great. That is awesome. I love that.
It helps kind of keep the focus on what we need to do. We need to take a stand against replacement theology, because it's just wrong. God does not repent of his promises. When God gives a promise, his promise is forever and eternal. And he doesn't repent of that. And he made a promise to those people, to the Jewish people, that has not gone away. Now, we get grafted in, and we get to be part of his promises too, but it doesn't mean he's taken it away from them. That's a whole different theology. So,
In the donor acquisition side of things, your 5-2-1-2, which is beautiful. If you're listening to this, go back and study that. That's awesome. In your donor acquisition, do you find that falls pretty in line with, you know, kind of the numbers of people you need to reach in order to get them to donate? And then, you know, I guess the back side of that question is to keep them donating.
Yeah. I think that's probably true. Not everyone who is a donor, an evangelical donor, supports Israel.
Yeah.
It is a subset. And I think that proportion might even be a little less than 50%. I would say it's maybe more like 30% that actually put dollars to their beliefs and we'll get involved with giving. But we have been involved in raising a lot of funds for Israel. I think last year we raised over $9 million specifically for Israel.
That's so awesome.
That's kind of fun.
I won't put you too much on the spot. I've put you on the spot today a lot, and you've been great. In the terms of the messaging and people giving, like, what do you think evangelical Christians resonate most with? That, you know, obviously, you know, the war, you know, is it's sad, but it's, you know, people give in wartime. But outside of that, what do you think resonates with evangelical Christians in terms of them giving?
Well, in the report, I don't have it handy, but in the report, we do detail that specifically. They give to help people in need. So those who are needing of humanitarian aid.
So humanitarian aid, I was just going to say that. Yeah,
those who are in need of medical aid. One of our clients is Magen David Adom, which is the Red Star of David, the equivalent of the Red Cross in Israel. And that's one of our largest clients. People give generously to help provide ambulances and first aid, first responders to the people of Israel. Because that's really a passion to help the people in very practical, pragmatic ways. So that's, I think the two of those fit together, because you have humanitarian aid, you know, feeding and medical help, and then you have first aid response, that kind of thing. And then I think you have those that you know, are interested in the spiritual Israel. You know, how can we support either the Christian community or the Messianic community? You know, how can we support the introduction of Jesus? And I don't want to say evangelization, but you know what I'm saying? Introducing Jesus to the Jewish thought. Yep. So that's a big part that people will support. I think the sad part is, and I think this is starting to change, the hardest one we've had over the years is getting people to support anti-Semitism, fighting anti-Semitism. And, you know, it's rampant today and it's growing fast. And if we ever needed to fight it, it's worse today than ever. But that's one of those situations that has a high cognitive load.
Yeah.
You have to talk about, well, what does that look like? And what does fighting it look like? And if you give money, how is that fighting it? I mean, it's just one of those things that's hard to address. But, you know, the fact is, if we don't fight anti-Semitism, it's going to become anti-Westernism. And so there's very strong reasons to support it. But yeah, so there are differences there, Dave. Some things the evangelical world, the Christian world, is much more resonant about than others. And I think that's also true with U.S. charities and U.S. Ministries as well. Certain ministries are much easier to raise money for, as it were, than others. Others just, you know, and a lot of it has to do with defining your message clearly and getting your brand right and all that. That really, really, really helps. But then also just that whole cognitive load piece. If some ministries are more complicated, then it's almost the strength of that financially is almost looking for larger donors that you can take more time and explain the vision more in more depth. They're going to be more likely the funders of those kinds of organizations.
You know, we've talked about this a little bit. I recently became a doctor of sport and performance psychology. And, you know, out of those studies, what I discovered, one of the things I discovered, there's a lot there, but, you know, the two tenets of a human being are the pursuit of pleasure and the avoidance of pain. And so when we look at fighting anti-Semitism, it's probably one of the weakest reasons why evangelical will support Israel, because there's just too much there. Like you're talking about that cognitive load. It's just too much there. So the pursuit of pleasure, the avoidance of pain, this is right in the middle of, I don't want to get involved.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like, I just don't want to do that. But humanitarian aid, yeah, I can help. You know, right. The fight, you know, there's some people that are out there. I might be one of them that want to get out their M16 and let's go charge. And, you know, I'll be the first one to die. I'll be the first one on the firing line. You know, there's very few people like that. In some regards, I don't want to be like that, but sometimes I do. There's some hills that I just won't die on. It's just not worth it. But I think when it comes to supporting Israel, it's one of those areas where like, I want to make an impact. So I'll do whatever I need to be there. But I think the most of the country just doesn't want to do it because of that reason, the two tenets of a human being.
Yeah. I think it's just, a lot to learn. I think people who, when they're educated about it, if they take the time to learn about it, it becomes a passion. And, you know, we've helped a number of organizations that operate in that space. We helped found the Holocaust Remembrance Association in Houston, and they're doing a great job.
Oh, awesome.
But it is work. And I think that does, you talked about personas. This is a little shift from that, but that does change your file base. Because if you have a high cognitive load ministry or organization, then your clientele is going to tend to be a higher donor. I mean, they're going to have a deeper understanding in order to make that investment. It's sort of like when somebody comes to your door and knocks on your door, the girl knocks on your door and says, would you like to buy Girl Scout cookies? Or my school is trying to raise money to go on a trip. Would you buy a $3 candy bar? That's a very sure. It's done.
Right.
I don't need the candy bar, but I'll give you the $3. Right. But if somebody's coming to your door and saying, listen, I need you to give me, you know, I'm going on a trip and I need $200. Would you be willing to give me that $200? That's something you got to think about. Who is the kid? What is the trip? Is this legit? Right. Not legit. It's a much deeper. And I think when you're talking about some organizations, I want to feed hungry kids in Israel or hungry kids in Ethiopia. That's an easy.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. If I have the funds, I'm happy to help. But when you talk about fighting anti-Semitism, or standing against, you know, anti-Western thinking, that's a much deeper process. You have to understand, well, what does that mean? How are we going to do this? What's it going to take to do it? And how does me giving make a difference? And once you get that picture, then, oh, okay, I'm in. But it does take that educational process.
Okay, so... this is a personal question. So this is not reflective of your clients. Some of your clients can be watching this, you know. Who do you think's responsibility it is to educate the next generation of evangelicals? Is it the church?
I put it on the pastors. I think it's on all of us,
Obviously it's all of us, but like, yeah, it's the pastors.
Pastors have to lead the way. And that's why I wrote the article I wrote. I'm happy to send you a copy of it.
Okay, yeah, I want to read it, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a challenge that, you know, we see the trend, and so we can reverse that trend, but it's going to mean pastors have to take up the challenge and say, you know, let me bring Israel into the context of my presentation, of my message.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you have to change the focus of your ministry at all. It's just putting it into context. It makes all the difference in the world.
Mm.
So, and I think that's true. You know, we're talking about marketing and branding. I think I'm going to take this back around the circle here. You know, when it comes to marketing overall, you know, you want to raise, why do you do public relations? To raise awareness. Why do you want to raise awareness? So that it's on top of people's mind. When it's on top of people's mind, they tend to be more engaged. They tend to be more willing. They tend to be more participant. They tend to be more likely to give or to buy or to participate. And that's really what marketing is all about, at least from my perspective. It's creating engagement. And so what do we need to do to create the engagement? Sometimes that's education. Sometimes that's challenge. Sometimes that's communication. But it all has to be done in a way that creates a resonant message. A lot of the Israel folks that we work with, they come to our company because we have experience in taking an Israeli position or Israeli charity, an Israeli need, and putting it into language that resonates with the Christian community. And putting it in the framework that it makes sense. And so that's why so many, I think, come to us and we work with them, because we're able to take their heart and match it to a Christian heart.
That's powerful. If you could, I think about this all the time, like in terms of what you do. And again, you've been at it for a long time. If you were to strip away the word marketing, what word would you replace it with? What do we do, Mark?
A word, I think it's, we generate engagement, but I think what we do is we facilitate. And that's not a good word. I don't like that. Yeah, we have a magazine called Captivate.
Okay.
And that would be probably the word I would drift to.
Captivate.
The whole, I think, whether we're doing donor work, whether we're doing marketing work or branding work, the idea is that we want to captivate someone's heart. Captivate someone's imagination, captivate really someone's good. Interests or goals or desires. And that's what marketing, branding, fundraising, public relations is really all about. It's captivating hearts.
And, you know, in some ways you're captivating your own heart of what God's got for you, sure. Right? You're aligning yourself.
Yeah.
So on the broadcast side, it works, but on the internal side, I've always thought about planning. You know, marketing, like we plan, what am I doing? Where am I going? How am I getting there? Mm-hmm. I think I like Captivate better than planning. Is kind of boring. But we have to plan, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It doesn't. Good brands don't just happen.
Yeah.
Good marketing doesn't just happen. Good communication doesn't just happen. You have to work at it. A good athlete doesn't just happen. It happens because they train. They have to have natural skills, certainly, but there's also training and coaching and development and all that that goes into making a high level athlete. Same thing is true, I think, when we talk about a ministry. The brand doesn't just happen. The messaging doesn't happen. The donor program doesn't just happen. It's a matter of training it and developing it and building it and tweaking it and getting everything humming just the right way.
Yeah, and pivoting from that, you know, if need to be.
Yeah.
So this has been awesome, Mark. Any final words of wisdom out there? Like, what's next for Mark and Infinity Concepts? Like, what are you excited about right now?
Well, what I'm excited about, we're kind of if we have 5 minutes, let me give you the
go
five
for it. We got 15 minutes.
Yeah, all right. So in 2019. Or 18, 19, Facebook started playing with their algorithms. And we were using some Facebook to do some marketing. And I realized this is not going to be dependable. You know, we can use it, but we can't lean on it. And so we started building our own media assets. And so a couple of years ago, we started something called Inspire Media Group, which is at this point, 8 different brands targeted to 8 different groups of people. We have Christian Health Update, Christian Leader Update, Christianity Report, LifeSpring Today, Quotes for Life, Touchpoint Israel, Viewpoint Israel. They're all targeted to different people, but they have 2 newsletters a week we publish, and websites and social media. And then we also use that for advertising because we can reach those groups for our clients because we already have that media set there. So I got excited about that. And so we got that up and running. And then we came across this piece of technology that we were able to license and own. And that's called IDX Pro. And it's a pixel you put on your website. And it will identify permission-based. It will identify 40 to 50% of your visitors on your website. Give your first name, last name, email address, and street address, plus some other data. And so we started using that. We started up Target Engine. I mentioned that earlier. And then I was working with a client just a few months ago, 2 clients, actually. One client had just written a book, and we were helping him pitch it to different publishers. And none of the publishers were biting. And one of them called me and said, "Let me tell you what's going on. This is a great book. I like it, but it's too heady, it's too intellectual, and it's too long. If the author will kind of tone it down and shorten it, we'll publish it." Well, the author was not interested in shortening his book, not surprisingly. And so I made a deal. I said, "Listen, I've never done this before, but if you'll let us, we'll publish your book for you.
Okay.
We know how to do all the steps. Let's see if we can do it together." So he agreed. And so we published our first book last year. And then I had another client I was sitting with that he had a book that was out of print, and he was doing a big event, and he only had 100 copies. And he said, "I know I'm going to need about 300 copies. And I went to the publisher. They want to sell me 1,000. I don't need 1,000. I just need a couple hundred." I said, "Okay, when do you need them?" He said, "In 2 weeks." About 8 days, we delivered 200 copies of that book to him. And we found out that we were able to republish books. And so we started something called Twine Publishing. That's our newest adventure. And so it is a unique publishing approach for a couple of reasons. Why did I choose the word twine? Because a twine represents a threefold cord that's difficult to break. It's scriptural. And plus, that gives us a company that can do the publishing, can do the distribution, and can do the promotion all in one place. There's nobody else that can do that.
Wow.
Second thing that we wanted to do was every author I talk to always is unhappy about the fact that the publisher owns their rights. And sometimes they have to negotiate to get their rights back before they can do other projects. So in our model, the author keeps the rights.
Okay.
We don't take the rights at all. We publish the book and do what they need to do. It's a fee-based model. And we provide the distribution and the printing and all those things. And I think it's going to be something that's should do pretty well for us. It looks like there's a lot of interest, and it's brand new. It's 2 weeks old.
Oh, wow.
So that's the news.
Hot off the press. This is great.
Off the press. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we'll put links to all this in the podcast notes. And I really enjoyed having you on, Mark. And there's so much to unpack there on the marketing and the persona and Israel. So thanks for taking your time, man. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate you meeting with me over the years. I know I really looked up to you. I still look up to you and what you guys are doing. And we need more of us out there that are Christian marketers that are helping to impact the kingdom of God. So if you're listening out there and you want to get involved, reach out to us.
Yeah.
We need more of you. We need more, and we need more people to follow God's calling in your life. Every client that potentially comes into our agency, I'm just like, whatever I can do to empower you. We may not be able to work together. Maybe we can, but whatever I can do to empower you to promote the gospel of Jesus, I'm all about it, because we need more and more people like that out there. So absolutely. Thank you for your dedication of 50 years, man. I'm 52, Mark.
All right.
50 years. That's crazy. So,
I think so too. I only feel 35, so that's
Well, you got enough going on. That's awesome. All right. Thanks again, Mark. Appreciate you having you on.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Join us again next week as we continue to uncover the secrets to success with faith-based testimonies and the power of R7. Remember, destiny awaits, but time does not.